Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Preferred Talk-Ons. It's not Keith leading in the show again. It's me.
Keith's not here.
Keith is not here. So at the 11th hour, we hit a scheduling snag. Keith had to dip out, and our scheduled guest on the show, Cougar Zach, also had to dip out as well. His job is weather dependent. We got some rain today, so he couldn't join us for the show today. So it's just Josh and myself. So we did a truncated version. We have some different show notes than what we had planned. So we tried to throw something together the last minute, but you don't listen to us for our professionalism, that's for sure. So Josh, how have you been since last week?
I'm doing well, Bill. Been 1 week closer to football.
That's right. How much of the Hall of Fame game did you watch?
I had the whole thing out of the background. So as far as paid attention.
Very little.
Yes. Yeah, it was on the whole time. And I kind of looked up and was like, okay, no one scored still. Oh, this is fun.
That's about how I was too. I watched the first quarter pretty closely. Kevin Hogan threw about every ball into the ground or missed his receivers pretty steadily. So not too different from how I was at Stanford. But
Drew Lock didn't look that great either.
It's good to have football back. You know who also didn't look good is Noah Fant.
He means dropped his first pass.
He also got blown up on a couple blocks, got a holding call. It wasn't a great first day for him, but at the same time, there's no need to analyze the first preseason game of the NFL. It's just nice to have it back.
I think we should just analyze everything about it and officially declare Noah Fant a bust.
It's never too soon. The Broncos should not have moved on from Jake Butt so quickly. If you ask me, it's a damn shame.
TJ Hawkinson is a blocking tight end at Iowa, though. Everyone knows that.
That's right. Yeah. So basically a seventh tight end or seventh offensive lineman for the Lions. But what do I know? I'm just an excellent podcaster between. So, there hasn't been much update from the last week in the world of college football. Last week we talked with Jordan about the Florida Gators and the SEC. We're moving slowly and surely towards the first week of the year. Camp has broken for a lot of teams. Unfortunately, a lot of teams are also reporting.
Except for Florida State, who's still,
152 days away now or something like that? But hey, they haven't posted a dumb graphic in the past week, so that's good.
Hey, there is something we can talk about that came out yesterday in the news of college football.
Okay.
We're not a Michigan fan podcast by any means.
Correct.
But you saw the Michigan State jerseys.
Yes. Michigan State posted some bold alternative jerseys, shall we say. If you didn't see them, they are green with lime green
lettering.
State, and then the numbers are just the regular mm-hmm. numbers, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's just an odd decision to go lime green. I remember their basketball team did a full lime green jersey, which
those
was
terrible.
They
didn't mix it. When you mix it,
right.
That's when it gets bad.
The highlighter is one thing, but when you mix the dark green with the lime green, it's a different story. It was hot mess all around. So
I just think Michigan State's all dark green.
That's what they should have. And honestly, the green and white's a good combination to start mm-hmm. with. Throwing in black every once in a while is a good mix too.
They went gold that one time.
Yep, which
was okay.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. The bronzy type finish on the helmet.
Yeah,
that's unfortunately kind of the major news right now. So they're Florida State for this week, kind of getting roasted for a different reason. A lot of players are out for the year already. A lot of ACL tears in week one of camp. Not great.
Always hate to see it.
You really do. And, you know, we could go name by name and report the fantasy implications, but that would be kind of a drag to listen to.
Right.
So other news, courtesy of Reddit/r/CFB, TCU makes beer sales official. Woo.
Good for TCU. I think, where do you stand on that? Someone on the topic with college football teams serving beer.
I don't see why not. They make enough money as it is. I mean, who cares if they serve beer or not? I mean, I know it's a lot of college kids, but just have strict ID checking at the booth.
Two, when you think that might serve as to like help during tailgates for people not to drink as much and get hammered, because mm-hmm. I remember when I was going to games in college, you know, you wanted to be drunk because you knew you couldn't
afford the beer.
During the game, they're not going to sell them, so you had to keep yourself, you know, having a good buzz for the entirety of the game.
That's true.
I don't see why not either.
I mean, like you said, most students are going to enter the game with some level of inebriation already. I'm not saying that makes the case easier for alcohol sales, but I mean, who really cares?
Plus, kids sneak flasks in all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, every student section has, like, a flask that pass up and down the rows, so.
And like we always say, the cynical side of me is, you know, the dollar rules college football anyway, so.
Yeah.
It's not like TCU's hurting for money as it is, but I did know the irony of them being a Christian institution and allowing alcohol sales, because I don't know if TCU is real strict on that. Being,
I say, you put some quotation marks around Texas Christian University.
Right, but, you know, little funny thing in my eyes.
Good for them.
Another random bit, Georgia and UNC are looking at a home and home for in probably 15 years.
That would be interesting.
So when Mack Brown has two national championships and has retired from North Carolina, and Georgia is serving their recruiting violations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No,
North Carolina might actually stand a chance in that game then.
That's just,
but probably not.
It's just so non-noteworthy. It's just like, okay, it's peak dead August college football news. Big deal.
What year did you say?
Oh,
they just even announced or just thinking about maybe doing one in the future?
Exactly. The head title, the headline was they are exploring a future home and home. Yeah, big deal. So, I mean, other than a couple years ago when UNC randomly won 11 games, they're not historically like a great program, so no. I don't even know why. I know why Georgia's considering it.
Because it's two wins for them.
Two easy wins and a lot of money. And then other than that, the CBS announced their top 130, top to bottom. I didn't really look at it too closely. Again, this is a peak August. The people are craving for content. We don't have an Urban Meyer scandal like we did last year. What?
Not really scandal, but... Zach Smith, apparently Nick Saban tried to get Zach Smith to go to Alabama.
That's right.
And yeah. Urban Meyer told him allegedly texted him and essentially told him not to, that they'd invested too much in him and that they wanted him to stick around.
Ohio State wanted him to stick around?
Ohio State wanted him to stick around. The story is Saban wanted him. Urban Meyer said to Zach Smith that he should stick around. At Ohio State.
Well, that worked out really well for all parties involved.
Yeah. So, it's not really a scandal. It's something. It's just something that people will talk about for a little bit.
And we'll blow it way out of proportion because we're just so hungry for anything college football related.
Ultimately, it won't matter and nothing will come of it.
Right. Sweet.
Yeah.
What I did notice in the CBS Top 130, the MAC sucks. It's tough, man. Akron is 129. Central is 115, Kent State 112, Bowling Green 111, Ball State 110. It's tough, a tough look for the MAC. Rutgers is at 113. They're the lowest Power 5 school. Your Bowling Kansas is 104.
Hey, don't worry.
I'm not worried. I'm
not worried about Kansas. I think they're going to be just fine. Shout out Kansas Jayhawks, 6-6.
There are a lot of low Power 5 schools, I think more than there were last year. Louisville is 96. Arkansas is 91. Illinois is 100. Georgia Tech is 90. Yikes. Keith's New Year's Six Bowl, Hawaii, is 86. I mean, I know we give Keith a lot of crap for that, but that does feel low. I think they should be a little higher just because I think they have a lot of upside on that. Northern Illinois is 69th.
Nice.
Wanted to mention that.
Another MAC school. Is that why you mentioned it?
No, just
because MAC school.
Yeah, I wonder. I bet Ohio is the highest one, the highest MAC school. They are 61.
Where's Western?
That's a good question.
I wonder if Western's up top.
They probably go
WMU.
This is great radio. 87.
87. Okay.
And Eastern Michigan is 89. That should be a decent matchup for when they get down there. So, all right.
Not great.
Enough on the CBS Top 130. You can find it for yourself. That was a pretty terrible segment, so apologies on that. All right.
I have something here. This is according to CBS Sports as well, but they put out their top five overrated teams in the top 25. So I'm going to go over these teams with you.
Now, is this based on the coaches poll that we – had last week?
Yeah. And just kind of get your thoughts.
Okay.
I'll give you kind of what they said, and you know, I'd like to hear.
Oh, does it have why they're overrated too?
It does. It has reasons. I'd like to hear what you say.
Okay.
And then I'll kind of give you a reason to why they have them. So number five on this list is the number seventh ranked team in the coaches poll, the Michigan Wolverines.
I think it's perfectly fair. Michigan lost three All-Americans on defense and does not have a running back that has more than like 20 carries on the roster. So I think obviously Shea Patterson's great. The offensive line is great. New offensive coordinator, cool, but it's a lot of buzz right now. I think they should be somewhere from 12 to 14, 12 to 15 with the Washington and Oregon. I mean, if Auburn is 16,
that's one of the reasons in here it says that Michigan is 7, while the team that beat them 41 to 15 in the Peach Bowl is 8th.
Okay. Also, the Peach Bowl was an aberration because, again, Higdon was sitting, Winovich was playing with one arm, Bush was sitting, Gary was sitting, and it was obvious that Michigan just didn't care. And I know as a Michigan fan, I'm going to take that result. I'm going to make that excuse every time when my team loses 41 to 15. But at the same time,
and then
Florida also out-schemed Michigan unbelievably well.
They also said that Harbaugh's 1-9 against top 10 teams. So there's that. Number four, would you like to take any sort of guess? I know that it's kind of grasping at straws.
The fourth most overrated
team in the top 25. Or why don't you just give me four teams? I'd say if they're on this list, give me your four top overrated teams.
That's a good one. I'll take Penn State.
Okay.
Now, here's the tricky part, too, because overrated could mean that they're ranked too high, but they still deserve to be ranked.
Let's go with ranked too high, but may deserve to be ranked.
I'll take Penn State.
Okay.
UCF.
Okay.
Northwestern.
Okay.
And Syracuse.
Okay. Bill, now one of your teams was on this list.
Nailed it. Love it. let's hear it.
The number four team is Georgia.
Really? They're overrated at third?
Yeah.
Hmm.
How?
Interesting.
What's your take on that?
I think it's pretty fair where they are.
I agree.
I think they're, if not third, they should be no lower than fifth. Because they were right there last year. I think they just, I don't know. That's I was not expecting to hear Georgia.
Either.
Okay.
So I am on board with that one. So we'll just go to number three. Number three is number 21, Washington State.
Okay.
This is going to be one, if Cougar Sack was on.
Yep.
They're going to.
That would have been a great talking
point.
Which you
can bring up when he's on, because that will piss him off.
Absolutely.
So
he'd argue that they should be the top 15 team.
Yeah.
I can understand it, but I don't necessarily agree with it, because they're returning a lot of pieces last year, and Leach has obviously proven that he doesn't need a returning quarterback to succeed. Last year was a prime example. I don't know if he'll get the same out of Gage Gubrud, sorry, I can never pronounce that correctly, as he will out of Gardner Minshew, but I mean, Leach has proven that he can do the job. So I think 21 is fair for Washington State.
It is Pac-12. I think Pac-12 is one of those conferences that's really up in the air.
Oh.
I mean, the teams have their favorites, Washington, Oregon, but
absolutely.
I definitely think it's one that, who knows?
Side note, before we move on, I'm seeing a couple more, conference predictions to come out. I still don't see how it's anybody's but Washington's to lose right now. Oregon is the odds-on favorite, but I think it should be Washington's. Just saying.
Well, we're going to stick with the Pac-12.
Okay.
And the second most overrated team in the top 25 is number 23, Stanford.
Okay. Also makes sense. I just think, Stanford's just so boring. Like, they always start like 20 to 25, and then they just finish 8-4 every year and win a bowl game 13 to 10.
And it starts all over again.
Exactly. I mean, they still have KJ Costello. But he's just, we talked about Kevin Hogan to start the podcast. He's just this year's Kevin Hogan. I don't really see that much of a difference in him. They always play good defense. Obviously, losing J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Bryce Love are big. But Bryce Love was also hurt most of last year, and they had to rely on new guys anyway. I think 23 is fair. If you're going to replace him with anybody, I think Virginia and Army should have been ranked.
Well, Stanford's got a tough schedule. Just Northwestern, USC, Central Florida, Oregon, Washington, Notre Dame. A 6 of their 12 games right there.
But at the same time, you shouldn't penalize a team just before the season starts.
Agreed.
Based on their schedule.
That's why these rankings mean absolutely nothing. And that's why we picked them apart at the beginning of the year.
That's right. Because it is August 6th, and we don't have anything else to talk about.
And number one on this list, and after this, we'll get into your own list of the teams you said or why.
Okay.
But the number one team on this list, I'll already tell you, I don't agree with it, is Michigan State.
I would say they're underrated.
Oh, yeah.
At 20?
The same thing. And they had a referee last year. They got a lot coming back.
Yeah, they
do.
Their
defense is going to be
so
very good again.
You get healthy Brian Lewerke. It's just – I know we make a lot of jokes about the offense. And D'Antonio, the only changes he made on offense, he played musical chairs with all the assistant coaches, which that doesn't make sense to me. But at the same time, I think D'Antonio's proven that you should trust him. Whether the offense improves or I shouldn't say improves, just at least gets more creative is still to be seen. But at the same time,
he's got a proven track record.
They literally have a top 3 to 5 defense in the country. That alone should make them a top 15, 20 team. And they're at 20 right now.
And I don't think there's anywhere their offense is as bad as they were last year.
No, that's the thing. You can't get much worse.
So let's get it.
That's an interesting list.
Yeah. As we kind of went over them, you know, I think the only one I really agree with is Michigan.
Yep. Same.
But let's get into some of the teams that you talked about. I want to start with one that I agree with you 100%. That's Penn State.
Yeah. And again, it's not that they shouldn't be ranked. It's just I don't think they're the 14th best team in the country going into the season. They not only lost Trace McSorley, mm-hmm. but they also lost Tommy Stevens, who went down to Mississippi State to join Joe Moorhead. Makes sense. So they're rolling with what was their third-string quarterback last year. They are rolling with a new starting running back. And I also think that James Franklin is going to get a little more exposed this year now that he doesn't have program record holders anymore of Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley. Good defense, not to the level of Michigan State's or Ohio State's or Michigan's. So I think 14's a little high. I think that's mostly on their track record. Just like Michigan.
Sure. Let's go. Wasn't our team? You said Syracuse.
I don't know a lot about Syracuse, to be honest. I think a lot of it was just based on Eric Dungy leaving. He was the emotional leader and physical leader of that team. And I think a lot of it was, again, they rode an easy schedule to a 10-win team, to a 10-win season last year. And they have a very easy schedule this year. Honestly, their only difficult game. They're not really challenged, other than week 3 versus Clemson, they're not really challenged until they travel to NC State, I guess you could say, and then host Pitt. But that's like week 7 and 8. So that's, I don't know. 22 just feels high, especially like when I said Virginia and Army are not ranked. And then another one I said was UCF. These also came with Daryl Mack also now out for the season. They're rolling with Brandon Wimbush. So, obviously, I know UCF is kind of the cream of the crop of the group of five, but they came in tied with Wisconsin, but they're also one spot below Auburn. So you're telling me UCF and Auburn are on equal footing?
Bill, did you watch the 2017? Was it Sugar Bowl?
Yes, when Auburn
who won that game
didn't care at all.
Central Florida won national chance, baby.
That was also with McKenzie
Rep
Milton. No, so they're on their third string quarterback.
Who's Brandon Wimbush?
Who lost the job at Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's Notre Dame, though.
Fair point. I think 17's a little high. But at the same time, you got to put a G5 team in there somewhere. And the last team I had was Northwestern. 25 is fair. I just...
They'll finish 7-5 or 8-4. It doesn't really matter.
And they always start really slow.
They have a tough game to start off the year this year, too.
Yeah, exactly. They barely beat Purdue last year. I know Purdue beat Ohio State, but Purdue was also they finished 6-7 and got blasted by Auburn.
What a shitty game that was.
No, that was terrible. Remember a few years ago when Northwestern lost to Western Illinois to start the year?
Yeah.
So it's just like they always start really slow. And yeah, in 2016, they lost to Western Michigan, lost to Illinois State. That was it. 7-9. Beat Duke and lost to Nebraska. So they started 1-3 and then finished 7-6. Go figure. They're just weird. I don't know.
That was a top player for Michigan, for Western, right?
Yeah, it was. Clayton Thorson's gone. Justin Jackson's gone. I don't know. They're replacing a lot. Their defense, obviously, defense is really good. It's a Big Ten team. Of mm-hmm. course, their defense is going to be good. But starting ranked is generous for me in my eyes.
Well, I want to tell you about something real quick that I did last night.
Is that podcast appropriate, Josh?
Yes. So Des was doing homework.
Nerd.
Grad student, please. So I there's a YouTube video that simulated Michigan's whole season via Xbox.
Okay.
It updated all the players. It was like 20 minutes long, so I watched it.
So this is this NCAA football 2014 with updated
rosters?
Rosters?
It must have been.
Okay.
Because
I know the new Madden has like a watered down version of NCAA, but I know you can only pick like 10 teams. I don't know.
This had to have been telling
okay.
whatever the last year was. What record do you think Michigan finished the year with?
In the simulation?
Yes. No, not counting bowl game.
Okay.
Or not counting any postseason.
Okay. I'll say 10-2.
They went 12-0, Bill.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Well, you can mark them down in the Big Ten title game right now, I guess.
I guess. If you're a betting man, what I think they're like 9.5 or 10.5. Put some money down.
Still find a way to lose to Ohio State at 12-0.
Not according to the simulation.
Do they do any other teams simulations?
They have other teams.
I only watch
the Michigan one.
Okay.
Because it's kind of boring, but I was like, I'm just curious.
Well, hey.
Fun to watch.
If the computers say so. I mean, the BCS was never wrong. So
that's true.
The computers always know. I guess it's only fair, right?
Yeah. So why don't we take a quick break here?
Yep.
And we'll get back and we're going to talk. We talked a little bit last week about the pod system
mm-hmm.
that you have designed.
Correct.
Based on soccer, I think, right? So it's based on
a part of it.
Soccer. You
a part
soccer.
Of it.
So we're going to kind of get into that.
Well, speaking of soccer, it's Premier League kickoff week.
Please.
Don't roll your eyes. I can't wait.
I saw that tweet. I'm sorry to all our followers that were tweeting about soccer.
You're just mad because you're a Crystal Palace fan.
Is there
You'd say that with a straight face. All right, we'll be right back. We'll take a real quick one, quick break. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the quick break. All right, so in an effort to we apologize. This episode's a bit of a clunker. Appreciate you bearing with us. As an emergency topic. No, it's not an emergency topic. We moved it up from when we had originally planned on it. So my college football, I don't know what you call him. Well, Bill Connolly, the guy I look up to in college football, who created the S&P Plus analytics system, he developed a scheduling system called pods where everyone is in groups of four. And then your schedule changes year to year based on that pod. So I took a similar method and tweaked it just a little bit that also includes a promotion and relegation system. Now, he also did something similar, but he, I think a couple of years ago, he posted this really long article that had either a promotion relegation system, and he simulated all the way back to 2006, or the pod system. So I combined the two. So basically, the way I feel, currently you have 130 teams playing for the same national title game. That doesn't make a lot of sense considering you have Alabama and Clemson playing for the same trophy as Texas State and UTEP. So in an effort to make it fair to everybody and kind of level the playing field, so to speak, I crafted a scheduling system that does away with major conferences. So right away, we know it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a 6-team pod, and those pods are geographically based. And then your schedule is still 10 game or 12 games. You play the 5 teams in your pod, and then you play other teams who finished in the same place as your equal level pod. So here's where it gets a little confusing. And I apologize because this is a lot easier when you can visualize it. There are 7 pods. They are the Starbucks pod, which mm-hmm. is the Pacific Northwest, the flyover pod, which is the flyover states,
mm-hmm.
the secession pod, which is the Deep South, the Bible Belt pod,
and
Midwest, the good old boy pod, which is
down south,
south/Texas, the spring break pod, which is Florida,
goes without saying.
And the high tide pod, which is out west, the Cali bros,
yep.
the surfer bros. So the tricky part was I had to use my own judgment. And within these pods, there are 3 tiers. And I had to pick the tier 1 teams for each pod. So that's basically the best team in college football history on down. So like the best team in each pod, for example, is like Washington, Nebraska, Clemson, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, LSU, you know, all the blue bloods are in the tier one. So without getting too mundane and breaking it down, a sample schedule. So based on the 2017 records, let's say, okay, so Clemson finished 12-2 that year. So the following year in 2018, they would have played the teams in their own pod, which is Virginia Tech, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, Kentucky, and NC State. You know, it's a little geographic, it's local, you can keep your same rivalries. But then they also play the teams that finished in first place in the other six pods. So I'm sorry, it's an 11-game season, not a 12-game season. So the other teams that finished in first place in their pods are Washington, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Mississippi State, Alabama, and USC. So the whole point of this being Clemson doesn't have a cupcake walk to 12-0 like they do every other year other than playing Texas A&M. So hopefully Alabama and Clemson and Georgia won't finish 12-1. They'll be like 8-4 or 8-3 because you have some tough games. Now here's the tricky part. You also get demoted if you don't do well. So the team in tier one of the Starbucks pod that got demoted would be Colorado. So they go to tier two, and then they play Colorado State, Air Force, Utah State, BYU, etc. So the whole reason I did this was because it gives you an incentive, even if you're on the lowest tier, it gives you an incentive to do well. Now, I know this will never happen because it does away with conferences and we'd have to redo TV deals. So that's a lot to take in. I apologize. I hope I didn't ramble through that too quickly. But it's a lot easier to visualize, and I made a color-coded spreadsheet and everything.
We'll post it to Twitter.
Okay.
If it works.
We can do that.
If you're interested and kind of want to see what he's talking about, Bill will post it to Twitter account because it really is interesting to think about. It, like you said, it'll never happen. But can you imagine just a year where a team like, let's see, who should we go with here? Washington did play Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Boise State, Utah, Nebraska, Clemson, Michigan, LSU, Miami, Cal.
That'd be awesome.
That would be every Saturday. There's no cupcakes, no nothing. It's great games every week, all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here's my four bullet points as I went through this. Reorganizing college football teams based on geography and relative success / ceilings. That includes their budget, your branding, your market, your staying power, basically, you know, like Kansas that one year had went, what was it, 12-0 and went to the Orange Bowl. So FBS has 130 teams, but for this to work specifically, we need to bump it down to 126. So unfortunately, I had to eliminate some teams FBS.
You got rid of Liberty.
Yep.
UTEP.
Yep.
And Hawaii.
Right. Which I regret that now. So I think my new choice would be to get rid of, sorry, Feve, UConn. Got to bring Hawaii back. And then probably New Mexico or New Mexico State because they're in a really bad spot right now and not bringing in a lot of money. So it might be best for them just to bump down to FCS. Or who knows, maybe there's a way that I can expand it even more and make it like a 132 teams. Cause the tricky part is it has to be an exact division of each. So basically teams are divided into pods of six, three pods make their village. And then every team in your pod, you play every team in your pod and based on your finish, the other teams in the village, and then teams are relegated within the village, changing your schedule year to year and postseason fixtures are based on village successes. So, the whole point of this being you have at the end, how to do this at the end of the season. The whole point of it being you have an odd number of games, so you don't have to do a tiebreaker. You automatically have head to head. You don't have to go based on wins and losses because of an odd number of games. It's already built in.
How would you handle the goals?
That's the tricky part. I don't think I ever got that far of how the postseason would work because, you know, say when Alabama plays USC, Mississippi State, Ohio State, Clemson, Wisconsin, Washington, of those six, let's say they go 4-2. So they get a one seed. Does that mean they play, the sixth seed or the seventh seed? I don't know how the postseason would work. That was a tricky one. I thought I had that figured out, though.
I think it'd be awesome if the NCAA would do this.
I would love it because, like, UCF has had a great couple of years. So you promote them to the top tier. They finally get to play Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, Miami, Florida State, then Wyoming, Kansas State, NC State, Northwestern, Troy, Arizona State. Like, not only is it good football, but you also get good brands and good styles clashing as well.
You can shut up the USC student, UCF student section.
Exactly. Now they finally get to play
national
a really difficult schedule and put your money where your mouth is.
So I'm going to give an example of a pod. I'm going to give an example of one of the villages just so people can kind of get more of a visual, I guess. So we'll go with the secession pod. Okay. Tier one, you have Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia Tech. Tier two, Maryland, West Virginia, Syracuse, Duke, UNC, NC State. And then pod three, East Carolina, Western Kentucky, Charlotte, Wake Forest, Old Dominion, and Marshall.
And it got tough, too, because I had, like I said, I had to make some tough cuts about which tier certain teams went into. Like, you could definitely make an argument for, I don't know, you could say, like, BYU should be in the top tier over Colorado, for example. They were both really good, like, 30 years ago, but based on market and just, like, overall power, I think Colorado deserved the top tier. So that was the hardest part, was getting them originally organized, but it does the job. Like, I want to live in a world where I can see Michigan versus LSU on a yearly basis, you know?
And you, I would love that.
And you don't have to wait for the dumb bowl season where everything is tied to a certain conference here and there. That's all I'm saying.
I think a lot of people would agree with you, Bill. I think that it's a good system. I think
Thanks.
That it would be super interesting. And I don't think it'll ever happen.
Nope. It won't, because the conferences have their TV tie-ins. They make a bunch of money, and it's just too much change to happen so quickly in 1 year of college football.
Agreed.
Because at the same time, if you're a recruit and you go to one school, then you're okay, all of a sudden you're going into your sophomore year and you have to play completely different. You're traveling a lot more. But at the same time, teams are completely capable of doing that now, which is another reason why I did this. The only reason conferences exist in the first place was because they were geographically close, and that's about all you could do on a Saturday. But now...
Nowadays, teams are going...
Right.
All over the place.
Yeah. You can get to, you know, if you are Virginia Tech, you can fly out and play Oregon and be back rested for Tuesday, you know, for the next week of practice to start.
I'm just going to say Arizona State this year.
Exactly. That's another good example. Or like a couple of years ago when Michigan State and Oregon did their home and home. Those are great. So there's no reason that travel should restrict a team's schedule this anymore in 2019. And same for bowls. Like, it bugs the crap out of me why a lot of the bowl games still have conference tie-ins. Like, so you get a lot of these repeat matchups that really aren't that exciting. Especially last year's bowl was crazy. Like,
last year's bowl season was very, very, I don't want to say boring because it is football.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of was.
Like, the Washington State-Iowa State
was the
Holiday Bowl really turned out to be great, which I honestly didn't expect it to be that good. The Michigan-Florida game sucked.
Michigan-State-Oregon game?
Not great.
Sucked. National championship game.
The semifinals weren't good either.
No.
Alabama was up 28-0 after one quarter. Clemson was up on Notre Dame very, very dominantly.
And then
we all know what happened in the national title game. So And we know the semifinals aren't tied to a conference, but I want to be able to see more like MAC versus Big 12 or like Mountain West versus SEC. We never get to see that. And so rarely does it happen because of the conference tie-ins with the bowls. And yeah, at the beginning of the regular season, you have to schedule 10 years out. That doesn't make sense either.
No, when we see these schedules coming up that saying, 2025, so-and-so-and-so-and-so has scheduled a home-and-home. That makes no sense.
Right. Who cares? The kids that are replaying for that school can't even tie their shoes yet. Like we talked at the top of the show, Georgia and UNC are planning a home-and-home or are looking into a home-and-home. Okay, when that actually materializes, who knows where college football will be? We could have 16 teams in the playoff by then.
It was the same thing last year when Alabama played Louisville.
Yeah.
Like when they made that, Louisville was good.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville was relevant. Relevant.
Right.
And then that game turned out to be
really
a
boring.
Show.
What was it, like 55-7 or something last year? I want to look that up now.
So I would love to see more of, I know logistically it's not possible, but
right.
Year by year scheduling.
I mean, that's how the NFL does it. There's a formula to figure out who you play each year. You rotate the other conferences' divisions, and then you play the same place as you finished the year before.
Then it also comes down to, once again, money. Teams
yep.
may not want to go somewhere because they're not going to get as much money.
Right.
You know, teams, Alabama might not want to go to Central Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that happen.
Last year's Alabama-Louisville game was 51-14.
How many of those were garbage points?
Louisville scored with 6 minutes left in the third when it was 34-0, and with 2 minutes left in the game when it was 51-7.
So, yeah.
Not close.
Stupid.
Yeah. That's a great point, too. And Jimbo Fisher actually said this at SEC Media Days, was that FCS teams, although they get their ass handed to them, they need to play.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Shout out Georgia Southern, who beat Florida. That's the only time an FCS team has beat a and North Dakota State beat Iowa one time. It's the only one that comes to mind. I don't think there's any other.
I can't think of any other.
No, but they need to play the Power Five schools because 90% of the FCS team's budget comes from that payout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get $1.5 million to go to College Station,
get your ass kicked,
and then you drive home. But you got everything paid for the year.
Got that much money.
So eliminating that would also it would ripple down to D2, D3, NAIA, because a lot of these schools that go to bigger schools and get their ass handed to them would be out of luck. That's another thing to consider. It would be tough because the only time you get to watch FCS football is when they do their postseason play.
Right.
So they're not getting as big of a piece of the pie from the TV money as the Power 5 and G5 are. And it's getting better. You know, the Sun Belt signed a pretty big contract. Or the AAC just signed a pretty big contract to the ESPN. So it's definitely improving, but it's not perfect. So there's a lot to consider when you look at a massive overhaul like this. The other tricky part about instituting something like this, there's no halfway point to be able to like dip your toe in the water and slowly.
You got
to
go all in.
Exactly. You got to completely obliterate every conference and then reassign everything. With this comes eliminating a lot of good rivalries.
Also true.
I did the best I could to try to keep a lot of them. But like, you know, the past realignment from 10, 12 years ago also redid a lot of that, unfortunately. But like you don't get Nebraska versus Iowa anymore, which is always a fun one. You get Nebraska, Wisconsin, but it is what it is.
And even like, you could lose Alabama or Auburn, like one of those teams where you get knocked out of their tier, bumped down a tier.
Which it's very possible.
Auburn and Alabama are playing each other.
If, you know, Auburn's got to play Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Florida State, Miami, it's possible that Auburn drops down and you don't have an Iron Bowl that year, which is, not going to lie, hard to think about. But,
I mean, based on 2017, this is the one that you made here. UCLA and USC would have played each other.
Right.
UCLA finished 6-7. They'd be marked down in the pod, or they'd move down in the lower tier. So then you are losing a lot of rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's hard to imagine a college football landscape that in theory could have a year where you don't have Michigan play Ohio State and you don't have Auburn play Alabama. You don't have Washington play Washington State. But for the greater good of college football, I'll fall on my sword for that. Thank you for my service.
It's a cool idea. It's fun to think about.
But that's all it is. It's just kind of a fun exercise just to see what you can do. And this is like the third realignment thing that I've done. I also did one that's like purely based on geography. So you have like, I think I did like seven conferences of like 14 teams each or something like that.
For those of you that don't know Bill, he has a folder on his work desk. It's called Useless Garbage.
No, it's not on my work desk. I keep it in my backpack.
Oh, okay.
Away from my desk.
Sorry, not in his work desk. And it is just chopped full of these different... anything you could really want as far as like rankings based on anything go, schedules, obviously these pod schedules. He makes this thing every week for watchable games, somewhat watchable games, and hey, at least it's still football games for us, so we know what games we should be tuning into. So he's very, very helpful with all that, and it's pretty crazy if you ever get a chance to see all of this.
Yeah, like last year I did, I always do a big bowl thing every year too. Last year my bowl packet topped at either 9 or 10 pages. I didn't put page numbers on it. I'm kind of embarrassed about that. The first page is the big bowl schedule, pretty simple. Second page is the bowl pick'em, and of course it's got to be a contest. So I tied each bowl matchup to a point value. A group of five versus a group of five bowl game was 2 points. A G5 versus a P5 was 3 points. A P5 versus a P5 was 4 points. A ranked P5 versus P5 was 5 points. New Year's Six Bowl was 6 points, and the semifinals were 8 points, and the championship was 10 points. So you picked every bowl game with a maximum of 158 points possible. It's like betting when you don't have to put up any money. And then I did bowl season watchability based into do not miss these games.
Which let's read the do not miss these games and kind of go over real quick how watchable they actually were. Because we just talked about how shitty the bowl season was last year.
Unfortunately, a lot of them didn't turn out to be great. One was the Rose Bowl, which was a great game.
It was.
One was the Liberty Bowl, Missouri versus Oklahoma State, which came down to the last possession. Unfortunately, my post couldn't pull it out. Camping World Bowl, Syracuse versus West Virginia. If Will Greer played, I think it would have been different, but that one really wasn't all that close.
Yeah, Syracuse ran over, didn't they?
Yes. New Mexico Bowl, which was North Texas versus Utah State. It was okay, I think. Or no, that was not okay. North Texas got blown out because Mason Fine had to leave the game early. He was hurt, and that was it. And then the last one was the Armed Forces Bowl, Houston versus Army, which was a casual 56-point drubbing.
That one is polar opposite offenses right there.
Yep.
Could have been such an interesting game. Army obviously runs the option. Houston spreads it out, throws for 7,000 yards.
Didn't
live up to the hype.
Not at all.
None of them really did.
Not at all. And then I have the watchable category, which is either their polar opposite styles going at each other, or I call them Spider-Man meme games, when you have two of the same team. The Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other, two identical teams facing off. So, for example, Oregon versus Michigan State, especially last year, Oregon was not great offensively, but a really good defense. And like we mentioned earlier, we know what happened.
Yeah.
Also in this category was the Alamo Bowl, Washington State versus Iowa State.
Which turned out to be a good one.
Right. I apologize. I called the Holiday Bowl earlier in the podcast. That's not the case. Cheesa Bowl, Cal versus TCU. That was watchable in just that it was a comedy of errors. The 5-interception game.
Oh, yeah.
That ended 10-7 in overtime. And then I have kind of watchable. Something might happen. And then watch it only because you'll miss having football on soon. Which
we don't have to worry about because we have football on soon.
Right. Although I was pretty close with a lot of those. It was like Miami versus Wisconsin, Florida versus Michigan, Virginia, South Carolina, Stanford, Pitt. A lot of those ended up not close. And then moving on the packet, I have every team's S&P Plus ranking overall, offensive and defensive, and the matchups that I want to see based on S&P Plus and not stupid conference tie-ins. For example, I would have loved to see West Virginia versus Michigan State last year. West Virginia's number 6 offense versus Michigan State's number 2 defense. Ohio.
Those you wondering, Bill does have a full-time job.
I do. Iowa versus LSU last year, the number 20 defense versus the number 14 defense. Houston versus Marshall, the number 11 offense versus the number 13 defense. Just stuff like that.
And it's super interesting stuff.
The next page is a graph of bowls by S&P Plus totals. it's a visual way to see how good a team is at one aspect of the ball. Alabama's far and away the best team on the S&P Plus chart. Then I have coaches' records in bowl games and the school's overall record. I have travel markers, how far each team has to travel, and that's broken down by conference and overall.
Who traveled so, furthest?
Let's see, who did travel? Louisiana Tech. They had to go to Hawaii.
Oh, thoughts in person then.
Ohio State going to the Rose Bowl was the second longest. Washington State going to the Alamo Bowl was the third longest. And then Boston College to the First Responder Bowl in Dallas was the fourth longest. So it's no surprise the SEC always travels the least. But it's also they played in the warmest climate, so that makes sense.
Hawaii didn't travel at all.
Correct. Bunch of bums. And still lost. And then my last page is a potential 16 team playoff like the FCS does that has 10 conference champions and 6 at-large auto bids determined by the committee. Might as well, right?
Let's get into this. So what are the rankings here? What do you got?
So I had 1 Alabama, 2 Clemson, 3 Notre Dame at-large because they don't play in a conference, 4 Oklahoma, 5 Georgia at-large, 6 Ohio State, 7 Michigan at-large, 8 UCF, 9 Washington, 10 Washington State at-large, 11 LSU at-large, 12 Fresno State, 13 Appalachian State, 14 West Virginia at-large, 15 UAB, and 16 NIU. So this essentially takes the 10 conference winners and then the six best teams after them. So that's also fun because it gives you some motivation to win your conference. You're not stuck playing in the Motor City Bowl.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then, so the first round matchups, Northern Illinois, Alabama, UAB, Clemson, West Virginia, Notre Dame, App State, Oklahoma, Fresno State, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State.
Great game.
Washington State, Michigan, Washington, great UCF. Game. Those would be on site of the higher ranked team, so you don't get any neutral site stuff. And then second round is UCF, Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma. So it breaks down that the best team always wins, and I still get to Alabama versus Clemson in the title game.
I don't think I'd want to watch Georgia, Oklahoma again. That game was so boring last time they played.
Oh, that sucked. Yeah. No one had fun in that game. And then, you know, at least the Final Four is the same, but at least you know that they deserve to be there because last year I know there was a lot of people saying that Oklahoma did not deserve to be in the playoff, but it is what it is. And then you're also not stuck with a 3-week layoff in between the end of the season and bowl season starting.
I would love them to move to an 18 playoff at the very least.
I did a sample regular season for Michigan if there was a 16 team playoff, and I write Week 11, losing to Ohio State. Week 12, conference title, lol, in parentheses. Good optimistic fan.
Well, right, that's here. Just the way it is. We know what's going to happen.
It is, yeah, unfortunately. Well, not according to the simulation.
That simulation was bullshit.
I don't know. Some people are saying that the world did end in 2012, and we've been living in the simulation ever since.
Well, if that's the case, then I'm putting all my money down in Michigan and go 12-0.
Simulated Michigan or real-life Michigan?
Well, if we're simulates, all the same thing.
That's true. We're playing with simulated money. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Bitcoin. I have a lot of Bitcoin saved up.
Do you really?
No.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I didn't get into Bitcoin. I almost got, well, this is way off topic.
I can see that in the right place at the right time, someone talked you into a Bitcoin purchase.
I almost got an Iraqi dinar.
What is that? Is that
back,
like an Iraq-specific cryptocurrency?
It wasn't Iraqi specific. It was more like our value. How does that work? Our value of the dollar compared to their value. Their value of our dollar was very, very low.
Oh, at one point. Okay. Is the dinar just Iraq's currency?
Yeah, that's Iraq's currency.
Okay.
I had some buddies that bought like $1,000 worth of Iraqi dinar,
okay,
thinking that it would their currency would go up,
right,
as their economy went up,
mm-hmm,
and then they would just make,
right,
shit ton of money. They didn't make a whole
not a lot
of money.
Gotcha.
So that's really the only thing I almost got into. Never Bitcoin.
Well, I think it's for the best.
Fun fact for the day.
At the tail end of the podcast. You know we're craving football when we are talking about Josh's investments.
I promise. Yeah. We'll get Zach on here soon.
Yep.
He will be very entertaining. We will use that entire time to try to trigger him about Washington State.
Oh, he is so easy too.
And it'll be very, very easy.
One of the questions I had written down was, so how much will Washington State lose to Washington by this year?
That will get him. Yep.
He would get so mad at that.
Even though it's true, essentially.
And I think Washington's going to be better this year than they have been in the past 3 to 5 years, other than the season they went to the playoff.
And Keith will be back.
And Keith will be back. So we have a lot on the horizon.
Yep.
Thanks for bearing with us this show.
This is a put together in about a matter of a couple minutes after we got canceled on by our guests. So.
Imagine you were going to go on a cruise, and then the captain says, hey, the boat isn't working, so we got to go with duct tape and some popsicle sticks. And we set sail. Thanks for sticking
with
us.
That's what we did. All right. This was Prepared Talk-Ons. We'll see you next week.